rid of her.
You'll forgive Nilto's lack of tact, dear Duchess. He is a rather impatient man, though many people suffer him. Probably because he is a Taishan.
Taishan?
The Taishan are the rulers of Losand, my dear. There is one at the head of each profession, and it is their council that governs the country, just as Emperor Scathan governs Darkside.
But he's... your face.
Beauty isn't a requirement for the job. Now, Lotan, get rid of her.
I'm afraid our Lord Beggar is a difficult man to refuse, dear Duchess. But I believe our conversation was at an end anyway, wasn't it?
Chris Rose.
It was. And I thank you. Intis, shall we?
As they exited Lotan's chambers, Bayon peered alertly through, ever the bodyguard, looking past his mistress to see where she had been.
Duchess, is that who I think it is?
Lotan? He?
That man is a traitor!
As he spoke, Bayon drew one of his pistols. At the sides of the door, the two guards went for their own weapons, but Chris stepped before Bayon, placating.
I know, Bayon. Put the gun away, please.
For a moment, Bayon stood with his pistol aimed at the rapidly narrowing gap of the closing door. The guards waited, eyeing Chris's party cautiously.
Let's go before I decide to kill him.
That sounds like a good idea. Leave him, not kill him.
Bayon glanced over his shoulder just once at the guards as they left. And in that moment, the woman's pistol was visible, one just like his own.
Now, is anyone else hungry? I am ravenous and simply cannot wait to sample the local delicacies.
At roughly the same time, Kenton stood in the judgment chamber before the Taisha. Lady Judge Helas left him dumbfounded by her statement.
This council has decided that henceforth there will be only 7 professions in Losant. The Diem of the Sandmasters is to be dissolved.
What? You would disband the Diem?
Yes.
But you cannot destroy one of the professions. What good would that do?
Whining will get you nowhere, Rikensha. This council may do as we please. There are provisions for it in the law.
That was Lord Vey, the Lord Merchant who represented the influential businesses of Losand, and who had already scoffed at Kenton's claim of mastership.
The Lord Merchant is correct, young Kenton. The law says that if a profession is left without leadership, irrevocably decayed or destroyed, it can be removed.
That and Lord Vey hates me. Perhaps they all do. The Sandmasters have done so much to build this city, to help Losand, but that was before I was born. Now the people see us as aloof, a drain on their taxes, and who can blame them? When was the last time a Mastral helped build a meeting hall, a bridge, or a home? When did they... we last repair anything?
Well, may I close this meeting, young Kenton? Or does your mystified expression bode that you have something to add?
I do.
He had to convince the counselors that they were wrong, the way his father would have were he still alive. Kenton took a moment to prepare himself, tamping down his temper, steadying his nerves.
Might that be today?
Lord Vey, please let the boy gather his thoughts.
Then, bowing his head respectfully, Kenton began to address all of the Taishan Council.
The Sandmasters offer you all protection from the Curtsians.
Ha! We haven't been at war with the Curtsians for centuries. Besides, can you really claim to protect us when you failed so miserably at protecting yourselves?
Lord Vey makes an insightful point. The fact is, Kenton, that the Sandmasters cost nearly as much in the people's taxes as the Tower's soldiers, yet give nothing in return. Sandmasters are almost more famous for their arrogance than their powers.
And so now you do something? You strike when the Diem is weak and cannot defend itself? Why not speak out earlier? Try to change the Diem before it's...
Arrogance is the word you're looking for.
Fine. Before its arrogance led to its destruction. And what will the Sandmasters do? Dissolving the Diem will not get rid of us.
We were going to decide that during the next council.
Personally, I think exile is the best choice. forbid you to practice your unholy art.
What would you do then, Lord Vey? Create a state where sandmasters are hunted like sandlings? Turn this nation into a place of fear and prejudice?
I would remind you that sand mastery must be taught, young Kenton. It is not spontaneous. It takes weeks to even decide if a person has the ability or not. Sand masters never just appear in the population.
So, with this decision, you would eradicate the power entirely?
If a skill gives the people no benefit, then is it worth the trouble of its upkeep?
To say nothing of its danger.
The new counselor who spoke was Regent, the Lord General of the Tower, and hence the chief of Lausanne's armed forces. He was a stern and inflexible man, who had little patience for Kenton personally, despite the fact that his own son, Eric, and Kenton had grown up together and become best friends. That bond suddenly seemed a very long time ago.
They claim it's the money, but in the end it's our power they fear. Power they can't control. There is still good in the Diem. It can be beneficial. My lords and lady, would one throw away a tool simply because it has been misused in the past? Now, when the Sandmasters are weakened, is the time to change us for the better, not bury us in the sands.
You argue well, young Kenton, but I fear your words come too late. It is time for the Taisha to vote. My lords, how do you vote on the matter of dissolving the Diem of the Sandmasters?
In turn, each member of the Taisha thrust forth one hand, clenched fists held at the horizontal. Kenton watched as the hands opened and the votes were cast, thumbs turned down.
Dissolve.
Dissolve.
It is for the best, I believe. Dissolve.
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 Kenton's heart sank until Lord Admiral Delius, head of Lausanne's seafaring class and a notorious drunk, held his hand closed.
Lord Admiral Delius?
What? Lord Vey voted to dissolve? So I vote the opposite. Retain the Diem. Which leaves only you. One of you, anyway, Lady Helios.
I vote to dissolve as well.
Kenton wanted to be physically sick. The sickness he felt, the pain, he knew it was the burden of responsibility. This was what he had fought so furiously with his father to gain. And now he saw that all it brought was sorrow.
Kenton, step down. The vote has been cast.
No, I demand these proceedings be declared void.
On what grounds?
Suddenly, passages of the law were flooding back into Kenton's mind. Learned over all those years he had tried to find a way to convince his father, a technicality to force the Diem to fully accept him. And for the first time in his life, Kenton had a purpose to go with his arguments.
At the deaths of the other Mastrals, I immediately became acting head of the Diem, and I wasn't informed that this meeting would occur. By the law, any Taisha, including the Lord Mastral, must be given 2 weeks' notice to prepare for the council meeting that will remove his title for any reason.
Lady Judge Helis, please tell this boy he is a fool and let us be done.
No, Lord Regent, he is right. As Lady Judge, I must declare the proceedings of this council void. But I am hereby giving you notice, Kenton. In 2 weeks, this council will meet again to decide whether or not to dissolve the Diem. By the laws of the council, you will need a unanimous vote to overturn the preliminary decision reached here today. And I suspect the votes will not magically change during the wait. Furthermore, since your mastralship is in doubt, you may be considered to be only the acting Lord Mastral, which means you do not get a vote.
Aisha! Anything else?
A civil tongue, if you please. You have 2 weeks, Lord Mastral. Unless you can convince every member to vote in favor of the Diem, your profession, the profession of the Sand Mastrals, will be dissolved.
After the Taisha meeting had dissolved, Kenton found himself outside the judgment chamber with Diren, wondering what he had set into motion. People were flowing from the judgment chamber, most of them eagerly discussing the day's events. Many had paused to congratulate him on his arguments, though Kenton didn't see what they found so impressive.
That was a good speech in there, Kent. I mean, Lord Mastrel.
Thank you. I just hope...
You have 2 weeks to turn things around. Traitka!
A 2-week forestallment of the DM's destruction was hardly a stunning victory. However, he was quickly coming to understand that he couldn't afford to make enemies amongst Lossan's elite. He already regretted his treatment of the council in years past. As he stood there, watching the crowd pass, another person stopped to greet him. It was the Lady Judge Helis.
Young Kenton, would you mind helping an old woman to her quarters?
She appeared to have lost all of her earlier hostility. She now stood before him with an unreadable expression, her wrinkled eyes studying him.
I'll help her if you want.
No, Darren. Wait for me outside the hall. I will escort the Lady Judge. It would be my honor.
Quite kind of you, Lord Mastrel.
Don't you mean acting Lord Mastrel?
You are much like your father, young Kenton.
I don't know about that, my lady. I am stubborn, like he was, perhaps.
Stubborn and contradictory.
Maybe.
Don't be too ashamed of your nature, child. There is a vague line between contradictory and being discerning. Just learn when to object and when to allow authority to do as it is intended.
I must confess I'm confused, my lady. Aren't you angry with me?
Yes. You arrived at a very inopportune time, young Kenton. No one likes to be surprised at the last moment.
But you were going to destroy the Diem.
After a manner, yes.
I couldn't let that happen.
Do you understand the responsibility you have taken upon yourself, young Kenton?
Now you sound like my father.
He did enjoy laying responsibility, didn't he? I will miss Braxton.
Really? I thought you didn't like the Sandmasters.
Nonsense, child. I had great respect for the DM, and especially for your father. Both grew too powerful, however, and too arrogant. Those are things that breed enemies. The DM built itself up so high that when it fell, even I couldn't rescue it.
You would have tried? In the chamber?
I did try, young Kenton. That was what I was doing today. You said yourself the purpose of the law was to protect, not to destroy.
I must admit confusion, Lady Judge. Perhaps we were attending different trials.
Oh, yes. You are very much like your father. The Lord Merchant and Lord General, Lords Vey and Regent, are very powerful men, Kenton. As powerful as your father was. The three of them have been vying for leadership in this nation for decades now. Once the Diem stumbled, there was no chance that the other two would let it survive. There was no way I could have saved the Diem. I could, however, allow its enemies a complete victory at first, then convince them to go easy on the remnants of your kind. The Sandmasters could have continued practicing, probably as a sub-profession, in the draft.
But then we wouldn't have had a voice in the council.
True, but you would have been able to keep your identity as a group.
But if you are so intent on helping the DM, why did you push such harsh limitations on its continuance? There is no chance that I will be able to convince all 7 Taisha to vote for me. I could have perhaps gained a majority, but a unanimous decision?
Oh, young Kenton, you must not mistake Helis the person and Helis the Lady Judge. The Lady Judge must remain impartial, no matter what her personal biases. The DM is wounded, perhaps mortally. A simple majority decision wouldn't be enough to heal it. Now that the doubt of a practically unanimous decision has been cast against the DM, only a complete reverse of that decision will be enough to restore the nation's faith in Sandmastery. Any less would be a disservice to the DM. Such a decision would leave it irreparably weakened. My decision was not made out of vengeance, but out of pity.
They drew to a halt beside a large door marked with the hall's seal.
You have a chance, young Kenton. But I will admit that it isn't a very good one. I do not envy you.
Can I at least count on your vote?
The older lady looked regretfully at Kenton.
I am afraid not.
But you said you don't want to see the DM destroyed.
I don't. But if destruction is in the best interest of Lawson, then that is what I must support.
The DM's arrogance is broken. There is nothing to fear from us now.
Arrogance will return. Wherever there is power, there is pride. Besides, it's more than the DM's power that I'm worried about.
What do you mean?
The DM's financial situation, for one thing.
Our financial situation?
The DM has no money, Kenton.
No money?
Actually, it has great debts.
But the tributes...
Most professions stopped paying tribute to the DM a long time ago, child. They got tired of paying the Sandmasters, then having the Mastrels take whatever they wanted in addition to the tribute.
But the law...
No, the tribute wasn't part of the law, child. It was given out of respect and thankfulness, things that the professions stopped feeling long ago. I might have been able to do something if the Mastrels had objected, but none of them did. They actually seem to enjoy spiting the other professions. You see, the cessation of the tributes only gave the Mastrels more reason to misuse their powers and to ignore their responsibilities. You know that the golden sash you wear gives you the power to demand any good or service from a merchant free of charge?
Yes, the ferry I took here involved just such a transaction.
Technically, you are supposed to pay the money back, but there is no time limit set on when you must do so.
That's part of the DM's charter.
Well, the less tribute the other professions paid, the more the Mastrels demanded from the profession members, walking into their shops and procuring crafts or expensive pieces of art. There is a reason why the other professions hate the Sandmasters so.
I didn't know.
The only profession that has continued to pay the tribute all this time is the Guild.
The merchants? Really? That doesn't make any sense. Lord Vey is one of the most outspoken enemies of the Diem.
I know. It is very odd of him. Regardless, I cannot with good conscience vote in favor of the Diem as long as it retains such large debts. You can probably request ledgers from the separate professions to find out exactly how much they claim you owe them, but expect to see some very large figures. This has been going on for some time.
All right. I'll see what I can do.
That isn't all, young Kenton. There is also the leadership factor. If what I saw today is any indication, you are going to have a difficult time convincing the rest of your Sandmasters to follow you. A profession that cannot agree on its own leader is not stable enough to maintain its status, Antaisha.
I'll find a way to bring the other Sandmasters to my side.
Not just Sandmasters, child. I must lay one more task upon you.
Another? Why not? Better I die with no water than a single drop.
The professions represent the people of Lawsand. We govern by their sufferance. If the people are morally opposed to Sand Mastery, then I would not be able to continue to support you. First, you must convince the DM to accept you, but then you must convince Lawsand to accept the DM.
And all in 2 weeks.
Lady Judge Helis entered her chambers, turning to bid Kenton farewell.
I warned you, Lord Mastrel. May the Sandlord watch over you.
I'm certain he will. He's probably eagerly awaiting my failure.
Kenton found Diran waiting patiently beside the hall's outer steps, contentedly buffing a carapace statue's head.
Diran, always so tidy. You're too sans-cursed good for your own good.
What did you say, Lord Mastrel?
Never mind.
The crowd had mostly dispersed, leaving a few scattered groups, and the busker still singing for his next meal.
Truth is foretold by the stars, though often it's sought in the darkest of bars. So when it seems life awaits to begin, put down the glass and exit the inn.
Where is everyone?
They, went with Dryo.
Aisha. Come on. Back to the DM.
When Kenton arrived, the DM was busy with activity. Dryl seemed to be holding court amid the remaining Sandmasters, passing out his instructions.
And you shall take a room on level 2.
Thank you, Dryl.
You, Underfern, will take a room on level 3, where...
Dryl! What on the sands are you doing?
The crowd parted to allow Kenton and Dirin to meet with Dryl.
I am allocating the rooms on the top floors, Lord Mastrel. The Mastrels no longer need them.
Very helpful. And by what criteria are you allocating those rooms?
I choose those who seem most likely to be loyal to the Mastrels.
You mean to yourself. Now, stop this foolishness. We can discuss this later, find a fair means of allocating the rooms.
And why should I listen to you? You have no authority over me.
I was appointed Lord Master.
Let us move this meeting somewhere else. Say, in the very rooms we are discussing? Yes, let us move to the 3rd floor.
Dryl turned with a smile, shooting Kenton a victorious look as the sand around his feet exploded with light. The sand rose around Dryl like a vortex of light, lifting him into the air, ribbons of sand whipping lightning-like around him.
All of those who are able, that is.
He landed on the 3rd floor balcony of what had once been the Lord Mastrel's chambers and casually walked inside. Around Kenton, Sandmasters regarded him with embarrassment or amusement. Then, the 14 DM Fens and several of the more powerful Fens gathered their sand around themselves and began to rise into the air. None of them were as showy as Dryl, of course, and several were barely strong enough to lift themselves so high. Kenton was left standing red-faced, surrounded by a small crowd of Fens, Underfens, and Acolytes.
Very clever, Dryl.
A short time ago, that little move would have ended the argument. Slowly, Kenton reached into his sand pouch and pulled out a handful of sand. Hesitantly, irrationally fearing that his experience before entering the hall had been a fluke, he called the sand to life.
Come on!
It pulsed and shifted warmly in his hand, shining with the familiar glow of sand mastery. He sent it in a ribbon to the courtyard floor, where he gathered sand into it. Then he split the one ribbon into 3. The sand flashed, rising like 3 trails of smoke to surround him.
I didn't know Kenton could...
He can't! Can he?
But he could. Kenton raised his head, looking up at the 3rd floor with trepidation. Historically, 3 ribbons was the minimum amount required to lift a Sandmaster more than a few feet in the air. Many Sandmasters who could control 3 or even 4 ribbons still couldn't lift themselves to such a height. What if he still wasn't powerful enough?
I have to be.
He gathered his ribbons beneath him, one underneath his feet and one underneath each of his arms. Then he pushed. Air rushed around him, battering his face and his clothing as he shot into the air like a Zinkal arrow.
Yes!
Such was the force of his vault that he passed the balcony and continued into the air. Kenton floundered for a moment. Finally reaching his apex a full 20 feet above the DM's open roof, he ordered his sand ribbons to him, realizing with horror the drop that awaited him. Fortunately, he was good at falling. Even the weakest Sandmaster could slow a fall enough to keep himself from being seriously hurt.
Come on, Kenton. Just get to the balcony.
He sent the ribbons forward as he began to plummet, using them to guide him toward the balcony and slow him to a reasonable speed. His feet slapped against the carapace balcony, leaving him disoriented, his heart racing. The jump became worth it, however, the moment he saw Dryl's face.
I told you to stop this foolishness, Dryl.
You! Controlling 3 ribbons! It isn't—
Now, get out of my father's room!
And why should I obey a traitor like you?
Trails of sand swirled around Dryl as he spoke, rising to work for him.
Traitor? What are you saying?
Tell us why you came back so late, Kent. Tell us where you have been. Did the Kurchins treat you nicely when you went to collect your payment for betraying us? Or did they turn you away like the filth you are?
Surely you don't.
We all know someone betrayed the DM, Kenton. We've all figured it out. Isn't it convenient that you disappeared in the middle of the battle, then arrive here safely?
Kenton felt his footing slip as Dryl jabbed an accusing finger at him, his glowing sand swirling and expanding like a funnel. Dryl took another menacing step toward him, and Kenton slipped over the edge of the balcony, losing his balance. Around him, Kenton's glowing sand dissipated into a cloud of useless dust, while Dryl drew his own sand ribbons around him like whips.
This isn't my power.
Kenton realized.
It's my father's. He gave it to me somehow before he died. He did something then, bequeathed his abilities to me, or ignited a spark deep inside me, or something. Lady Helis pointed out today that the skill of Sand Mastery is taught. It's nurtured. It's not simply there. It has to be encouraged. Suddenly getting new powers is like getting a new set of hands. You know, they're useful, but they take a whole lot of getting used to. Well, I hope you're satisfied, Father.
Where he had been falling a second before, now Kenton was rising, white sand back under his control, charged by his power. The Sandmasters on the balcony watched in surprise, while Dryl gritted his teeth, the anger clear in the tension of his body. Then Dryl leapt from the balcony, down toward Kenton, who was powering upward on his own ribbons of sand.
Traitor!
Dryl was forming spear-like weapons from one of his outstretched ribbons as he dropped.
There's only one traitor here, Dryl. Only one man bitter enough at the DM for taking away his rank.
As he spoke, Kenton did all he could to knock Dryl's attack aside. Sand clashed with sand in a coruscating wash of light.
One man with a streak of vengefulness strong enough to commit such an atrocity.
What? You accuse me? You dare to accuse your better?
I dare!
In that instant, Dryl was knocked aside in a flurry of glowing sand, loose grains of glowing sand thrown against his body, dazzling him. Sandmaster scrambled to get out of the way as Dryl crashed to the floor at the very edge of the balcony.
Now, stay out of my father's rooms!
Kenton landed gracefully, though he was trembling inside. Without a word, Dryl stood and turned, walking away, accompanied by his entourage of supporters, before leaping over the balcony on new spiraling ribbons of sand.
And take off the sash! Otherwise, I'll report you to the Taisha for violating the DM's charter!
Kenton had argued many times in the DM's courtyard before, but never once had it been against one of his own contemporaries. Suddenly, he had a cruel insight into how removed his father must have felt, and how alone. Meanwhile, having located lodging rooms in the Darksider Quarter, Duchess Chrysala and her party were unpacking their possessions as they settled into their temporary home. The rooms were windowless, and unusually, there was a fireplace in the room, an affectation on Dayside where the sun never set and heat was abundant. Alone, they spoke only Darksider, and Ntis had assumed the role of repository of local knowledge instead of translator.
So now what, Duchess?
Gevon's quest ended here. Lotan said as much.
And you trust that contemptible man?
He had no reason to lie, Bayonne. Not about this. So, we shall go to the top. If my prince really did come to Losand, then he wouldn't have been able to resist introducing himself to the local nobility. Taishu?
You mean Taisha. There are 8 leaders of the Dayside professions. Some are more approachable than others.
At that moment, Cinder's case burst open as the lock snapped, throwing clothes and books everywhere.
Oh, Shella, 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 Shella.
Oh, Professor, are you all right?
Blasted case. The lock must have been knocked while we were traveling.
I'll take a look at it. Although why you needed such a complex lock for such dowdy clothes is beyond me.
Dowdy?
Now then, Intis, you will arrange meetings with these profession leaders for us.
I'll try.
And she did, getting the Darksider Duchess into every one of the guild halls. But the result was always the same. At the Hall of Judgment.
He says it will be a short wait.
Good.
And that the Lady Judge will see you in 3 weeks' time.
At the Tower Barracks.
They said that Lord General Regent is currently engaged in a hunting trip and will be unavailable for the next 12 days.
12 days?
The helm.
The Lord Admiral is on inspection duties and unavailable without a booking.
Then we shall book.
His booking officer is also on inspection duties.
The Merchants Guild Hall.
The Lord Merchant will see you immediately, just as soon as you pay the 2,000 lakh processing fee.
Too foul!
Farmers Congressional Stables and Marketplace.
Janel, the Lord Farmer, is currently overseeing harvest quotas and is unable to see anyone.
Until when?
I am beginning to detect a small flaw in your plan, Duchess.
The Lord Artisan's assistant is currently unable to locate him. Apparently, this happens a lot when he's working on a project, Duchess. Sorry.
At least Cinder's lock is working smoothly now.
Nothing like having time on your hands, Duchess.
The House of Masonry.
I'm afraid that...
Forget it.
Until finally, 7 guilds later, the Duchess, her bodyguard Bayon, and their guide Ntis returned to the lodging house they had rented in the Darkside Quarter.
My goodness, Duchess, you fixed it.
Your lock is the only thing I have fixed today, Professor Cinder. We couldn't get a single one of these Taisha to even speak to us.
You said there were 8 professions in Ntis. We have tried 7. Where would we find the 8th? What do they do?
The Mathras? Well, it's hard to explain in dynastic. They're like holy men, except not holy.
Very enlightening, I'm sure.
We must try. Ntis, you will take us to the Lord Master first thing tomorrow.
As you wish, Duchess, but I don't rate your chances. Rumor says the profession is about to be dissolved.
Be cheered, my lady. It is only the first day. We will find the Prince's magicians, if they exist.
If they exist.
It was quite the taxing day, however. If you don't mind, my lady, I think I will have the man there draw me a bath before we eat.
Oh, do we have running water?
Unfortunately, no. But we do have a well right outside, and I ordered a couple of houseboys to bring warming water for our evening baths.
Baths?
Yes. Baths. Wonderful, relaxing baths. The feel of the water on your skin.
Baths? In water?
Now who's asking stupid questions?
Daysiders have an aversion to water, my lady.
One of the house staff explained.
They are afraid of swimming and find the idea of immersing oneself in water extremely discomforting.
They probably assume they'll melt.
How very odd. I suppose it makes sense. They don't take baths at all, then?
It is customary to wipe oneself down with a damp cloth before one dresses after waking.
How sad. They'll never know the luxury of floating, surrounded by warm water.
You people are too strange. I'm leaving. You don't need me anymore today.
If you wish. Of course, you'll miss dinner.
I'll leave after dinner.
Ace was alone in her office as 12th hour approached. She checked the moon with a distracted look, noting the time. Though most of the important officials followed Taisha standard time, working from 4th hour to 9th hour, Khazar itself never slept. The streets were slightly less busy during off hours, but the change was barely noticeable. For Ace, it was time to sleep. She kept Taisha standard, and 12th hour was late for an already exhausting day. Emotionally as well as physically. Finding the traitor Torkel incarcerated with his dead family had been yet another awful reminder of how ruthless Sherzan was.
No, not Sherzan. Nilto.
She was so sure of that now. Every piece of evidence pointed to the so-called Lord Beggar. Her personal chambers were neat and unadorned. Many accused Ace of lacking imagination. They were right. Ace had little use for imaginative decorations, frills, or pictures to distract the mind. The hall was a place of work and efficiency. But today, Ace's efficiency had failed her. Her men had lost their lives for nothing. She was no closer to proving that Nilto and Sherzan were the same person than she had been weeks ago. And then, on top of it all, Ace had found out that the DM continued to exist. As a senior tract, Ace was privy to information that others did not have. She had known about the Lady Judge's plan to shut down the DM and had approved of it. The Sandmasters were blasphemy, poorly masked as people, their mere existence an affront to the Sandlord. Ace may have chosen to disobey tradition and join the hall, but she was still Kirstian. She followed the priest's Daikin. She often found it ironic that as a representative of the law, she was forced to protect the very beings that she accepted as her god's eternal adversaries. In addition, Ace had other reasons for hating the Sandmasters. The Mastrels, with their golden sashes, often made mockery of the law. When the law had been written and Lossend formed from a group of smaller warring countries, the only way to persuade the Sandmasters to join with the new federation had been to give their Mastrels near immunity from the law. Mastrels could take from merchants without fear of retribution. Mastrels were not required to follow the commands of a tract, even in the case of an emergency. Mastrels could not be brought to trial or even arrested without the permission of the Lord Mastrel. The Sandmasters were Lossend's deepest and ugliest stain. It was because of them that the Akkar named Lossend a nation of heathens, even though a large percentage of its people now believed in the Sandlord. If it weren't for the Sandmasters, then it would have been all right for Ace to join the Hall. It was because of the Sandmasters that Ace was rejected by her own people, called traitor even by murderers like Lachmlen.
Calm. Remain calm in the eye of this storm.
Ace, are you still working?
My Lady Judge, what brings you to my office so late?
Please remain seated, Senior. Oh, Ace, must you always be so formal? How many years have we worked together now?
18, my lady.
Always the perfect tract, Ace. I understand that your operation today was a success.
I lost 6 men, and 5 more have injuries that will keep them from duty for months. Yet I seem no nearer to apprehending Sherzan. He's always a step ahead.
True, but you captured a known murderer. You realize that Lachmlen has admitted to over a dozen assassinations besides the 3 tracts he killed.
I do.
Beyond that, the archers you captured were more than simple thugs. Several of them were wanted killers as well. A sound operation, Ace. You couldn't have known about the trap. I read Dane's report, very thorough, incidentally. The casualties would have been much greater had you not broken the archers' attack.
Thank you, m'lady.
And this is just one of many such operations, Ace. You have quite a reputation in Khazar.
I only do my duty, m'lady.
Oh, Ace, when are you going to let me reward you as you deserve?
If you mean a promotion, Lady Taisha, I must decline.
Why?
My reasons have been stated, Lady Judge.
Oh, I know you enjoy your work as a tract, but I need you to do more. I want you at the head of a hall somewhere where you can teach others to do what you do.
Trust me, Lady Helis. The last thing you need is a hall full of aces running around.
Trust me, we could do much worse. All right, Ace, but if you refuse to rise to the rank of judge, then I have another job for you. I am taking you off of the Sherzan case.
But
I see that you object.
I would never...
Yes, I know. You would never go against orders. I realize how much this case means to you, Ace, but I have something more important for you to do. Besides, Ace, I worry about you. Perhaps it's time for you to take a short break from Sherzan. My assignment will only take 2 weeks of your time. Then you may return to chasing him.
2 weeks. Ace knew straight away that the timing was not a coincidence. What could the Lady Judge have in mind?
You know of the judgment today, I take it?
I do.
This new Lord Mastrel is an enormous random factor. I still can't decide if he will benefit Lossend or destroy it.
Ace had no such difficulty deciding, but she kept that to herself.
I want you to go to him. Tell him that I fear for his safety, and I want a tract protecting him.
He won't believe that, Lady Judge. Sandmasters have little need of a tract's protection.
He doesn't need to believe it. He just needs to let you follow him, which I suspect he will do. Genton is in little position to deny my requests, even one to put a spy in his midst.
Yes, my lady.
Watch him, Ace. For me. Follow him and see what kind of a person he is. All I know of young Kenton is his impetuousness and his hostility toward authority, and neither are things I would find attractive in a Taisha. Report back to me on what you observe and tell me your opinion.
You realize what my opinion of him will be, my lady.
I know, Ace. Your hatred of Sandmasters is well known, but so is your impartiality when it comes to the law. Your job is to observe him as a tract, not as a Curtsian. Do you understand?
I understand.
I trust you, Ace. Perhaps more than anyone else in the hall. Keep an eye on this boy of a Lord Mastral for me.
Helas rose, dismissing Ace's own gesture to stand, then making her way to the door.
Oh, and Ace, go home and go to sleep. Your paperwork will keep.
Yes, my lady.
Alone once more, Ace clenched her fists again, the anger building inside her. Kenton sat alone in the Lord Mastral's chambers, once his father's chambers, now his, whether he wanted them or not. He sat with his back pressed against the wall by the open door, looking out onto the balcony overlooking the courtyard. Like all the rooms of the Diem, there was a tall barrel of sand beside the door. It seemed almost to mock him and his fledgling powers.
Kenton, the Lord Mastral who controlled 3 sand ribbons.
It was like the start of a joke, a terrible joke. It had been a long day, the longest.
I should never have let Dirin talk me into this. I'm worse than the 100 fools. What do I know of leadership?
He had tried all his life to tear down authority. Worse yet, just 1 week ago, he thought he had lost his sand mastery power forever.
And would that really have been such a bad thing? See reason? These are my father's chambers. This is my father's life. I don't belong here. I have never belonged here.
Well, where is he?
What?
Can anyone here find that scoundrel for me?
Who?
Kenton rose at the noise, making his way to the suite doors and peering out across the balcony beyond into the courtyard below. There, standing amid the white-clad forms of the Sandmasters, was his oldest friend.
Eric? What on the sands are you doing here?
Yelling myself raw, it seems. Has the high altitude of your chambers made you deaf?
A strangely familiar form stood in the courtyard sands, hands on his hips. Kenton frowned. He was dressed in the clothes of a traveler, flamboyant but worn, with hardy boots and a cloak slung casually over his shoulders. He looked a little older than when last Kenton had seen him, and weighed a little more than Kenton remembered, but there was no mistaking that curly hair. It was Eric, carefree, irresponsible, jokey Eric. The perfect tonic to his day.
You blasted Sandmaster still don't believe in stairs, then?
I'll bring you up!
Gently!
The two old friends embraced as Eric arrived in the Lord Mastral's chambers.
You've changed, Eric. I can't get over it.
It's been almost 3 years, Kenton. People do change. For instance, rumor has it that you were dead. Imagine my disappointment on seeing you.
That rumor is a little out of date. Next time I decide to come back from the dead, I'll consult you first, okay?
Make sure you do. And next time you die, I'm not going to mourn you. You can just count these last 2 weeks as your requisite grief.
Sans, it's good to see you again. How is Darkseid? Are you a successful merchant these days?
Well, that depends on how you choose to measure success.
So, why did you come back?
I told you, to visit my childhood friend. How are you coping, Kenton, with not being dead?
You did not cross the border ocean just to see me. What about your father?
Lord Regent? He disowned me, remember? So, now that you're rich and powerful, are you going to take me in? I could use a rich patron. They're much better than getting a job.
You can stay if you want, Eric. But I don't think I'll be able to provide you with a home for long.
So I heard. 2 weeks, eh?
Yes. Someone set up the Sandmasters out in the Curlew. One of our own. And now this.
You make it sound premeditated. Do you know who set you up?
I have my suspicions. Nothing I can prove. Yet. For now, I'm left with 2 weeks to convince all seven Taisha that the Diem can be responsibly solidified behind one leader.
I guess there's nothing to do but make the best of it, then. Even if you fail, at least we'll spend the next 2 weeks in comfort. So, start as we mean to go on. When do we eat?
The building that Ace called home lay far away from Khazar's business district, in a place where land prices were more reasonable. Here the buildings were pressed just as closely together, but few of them were taller than a single story. In such an area, even a tract could afford a house of his or her own, assuming she had been saving for 2 decades, as Ace had. As she walked the last few steps to her door, thoughts whirred in Ace's mind.
Damn the Sandmasters! God's eternal adversaries! All they know is how to take, and now the Lady Judge expects me to play nursemaid to one of them? A child leader at that. Maybe Lachlan is right today. Maybe I am a traitor. Maybe I've been fooling myself all this time, justifying my violation of the Sandlord's laws.
She walked quickly up the steps and entered. Her daughter was not yet 4, but her face lit up as she saw her mother, and she came racing across the room from the dinner table to greet her. Ace scooped the child up in her arms.
Ugh, Maloney! You should be in bed.
Well, she waited up for you.
I was scared you wouldn't come home, Mommy.
Little Canlisht, I am home now, so stop worrying.
Okay, Mommy.
Satisfied, the child hurried off to her own room, leaving Ace to talk to her husband, Melis.
She wanted to see you. She gets scared.
I know.
How did it go?
We got her, Melis. There were complications. Jadan died.
Oh, Ace.
Ace sat down, and Melis began to knead her shoulders, massaging the kinks out.
No wonder you're so tense.
I'm always tense, Melis.
As they spoke, Ace noticed a folded note that lay on the table among the remains of the meal Melis had prepared. She took it, unfolding it with trepidation.
What's this? Did you read it?
I couldn't help it. It arrived while we were out.
I enjoy our game, Ace. You gamble your family. I fear I have little to bet in return. Sherzad.
Our daughter isn't the only one who's scared.
He is only trying to scare me. The Underground maintains a measure of civility. It kills tracts, not their families.
Are you sure?
How could she be? The answer was no, and it was all Ace could do to not voice it. Their child lay in the next room, sleeping in innocence.
What if she's right, Ace? What if you don't come home one day? Jadan didn't.
What could you say when the truth is unspeakable? It was another day on a planet with no rotation and hence no change from night to day. Despite his worries, Kenton had slept. His body was truly exhausted, and so sleep had come. Now Kenton stalked the Lord Mastral's chambers as if admiring them for the first time. That was not so very far from the truth.
Do you know, until yesterday, I had never seen my father's rooms. 18 years of my life, 8 of them spent living here in the Diem, and never once had I visited my own father's quarters.
How was the bed?
Hard and unforgiving.
Sounds like your father. Or mine. I can heartily recommend the couch in the future, if you want to trade.
Your breakfast, Lord Mastral. Should I arrange for another bed?
No need. The days of Mastral elitism are over. Durin, I want you to find ladders so that regular people can reach the upper floors.
All right.
Now then, is that breakfast for just you, Kenton, or is there enough for the both of us?
Kenton... But Kenton's attention was on the courtyard. He had turned just in time to see Dryle dropping from the third floor room directly across from his own chambers. Dryle's sand glowed and swirled around him, and he was followed by three sandmasters with less impressive collections of ribbons. None of the four men wore sashes. Their robes were tied with black cords instead. It was a statement, obviously. They wore no sashes because they didn't accept Kenton's authority.
Kenton? You look like you just swallowed a sandling.
Do you remember Dryle?
Tall, arrogant, and annoying?
That's him.
I seem to remember everyone thought he was the perfect sandmaster.
He was. Now he's just a traitor.
A traitor? Because of what happened to the sandmasters and the Kerla? Dryle isn't the nicest person in the DM, but he was lucky to escape.
I wish to Sans I knew what had happened. It must have been the water.
Water? I've heard a dozen rumors about this. What really happened out there? Half the people I asked claimed the Sand Lord himself destroyed you, though why he would have waited this many years is beyond me. The other half claimed the Mastrels weren't really dead at all, but just hiding because of some mysterious Mastrelic scheme.
Before the advancement ceremony begins, we pass around a ceremonial bowl of water. Everyone takes a sip. Then... the Lord Mastrel hands out sashes to the oldest year of Acolins. Right after he did so, a group of Curtsians attacked. The Mastrel should have been able to protect everyone, but something went wrong.
Their sand just fizzled and died. The water sucked out of their bodies. There was no time to replenish their water, and they dehydrated, dropping like spent sand.
Oh, my.
They should not have dehydrated so quickly. It had to be the water. Dryle took the bowl first, but he didn't drink any water himself. He knew he was going to be on trial that day. In fact, my father revoked his Mastrel's sash. Dryle must have had some deal with the Curtsians. He poisoned us, then they could attack and cause the Mastrels to overextend and kill themselves.
Wait a minute. How big was this bowl of water? Weren't there thousands of sandmasters at your ceremony?
We refilled it as it moved along.
Then the poison would have been gone after the first round.
Maybe he only needed to poison the Mastrels. There was enough confusion caused by the deaths of the most powerful that the rest of us weren't able to defend ourselves. I know it's not a perfect theory, Eric. I felt dehydration too, but I'm certain the Dryle was involved. Not only didn't he drink, but he survived.
Ah, yes. How could he have been so stupid as to live? Horrible mistake.
Kenton frowned. Was his friend mocking him, or was he right to be skeptical? While Kenton pondered the matter, a boat was crossing the lake toward the DM. On board were three passengers, Chris, Bayon, and their guide, Ntis, as well as the ferryman who navigated the currents with deft experience.
DM up ahead! Why your lady would want to see those self-serving swelled heads is beyond me. You should tell her that.
Thank you, ferryman.
Realizing the ferryman had been looking at her and unable to understand the Daysider dialect, Chris asked for a translation.
What did he say, Intis?
That we were almost there. We'll be docking in a few moments.
Chris frowned. The ferryman's words had seemed harsher than that somehow. A few moments later, and the punt slowed, pulling up against the shore, where a line of steps forged from compacted sand led up toward the towering domes of the DM.
Watch yourselves!
Here we are, the DM, home of the final profession. You know, I've never actually been inside before.
Carefully, Duchess. Take my arm if you need to.
Thank you, Bill.
They ascended the steps and approached the grand gate-like opening of the DM. There was no gate. The entry was open. Furthermore, there seemed to be no one about.
Are you sure that this is the place, Intis? It's awfully empty.
They walked together, passing into the open courtyard with its sand floor. Chris began to walk forward. In the courtyard, a crowd of people stood talking, mostly in small groups. Some rushed toward other parts of the courtyard, where different groups stood placing ladders, and others seemed to be arguing about something. Chris frowned. They all wore robes, which was common enough on Dayside, The robes, however, weren't tan or gray like most she had seen. They were bright white. She'd only seen one robe bleached so colorless. Most noticeable of all was how young most of these people seemed.
Is this a profession of teenagers?
They had a recent setback in personnel, ma'am. You'll require the Lord Mathrath. That's him.
Ntis was indicating a man in hooded robes who stood with his back to them. Chris followed the gesture. There, standing in an authoritarian manner as he directed the movement of the different groups, was a man of average Dayside height.
Thank you.
Duchess, I...
Chris switched to Daysider, reciting one of the only sentences she had memorized overnight.
Profession Master, I humbly come before you to request...
Then someone moved, and she noticed the golden sash tied around his waist. At that moment, he turned absently, and Chris got her first look at his familiar face. It was Kenton.
Oh, you!
Kenton looked up with surprise. His eyes widened slightly for a moment, then he smiled.
Hello, Chrysala. How have you been?
I... you! Shala! Oh, you knew I was looking for... you! You lied to me!
Well, you didn't ever actually ask me if I was a Sandmaster.
How dare you! After I saved your life, after I let you travel in my presence, you liar!
Oh, I don't have time for this right now.
As he spoke, Kenton reached into his robe and pulled out what appeared to be nothing more than a handful of sand. Suddenly, the sand flashed brightly. Chris froze, amazed, as the sand rose out of Kenton's hand, moving seemingly of its own volition. It bent in the air, snapping down to the ground. Two more snakes of glowing sand rose from the sand below, gathering around Kenton's feet. Then suddenly Kenton launched into the air, a trail of brilliant grains streaming below him. Kenton ascended gracefully through the air to land on a third-floor balcony.
That's...
it's sand mastery. Why are you so surprised?
Oh, how did he do that? Wires?
I don't think so. It looks like we've found our sand mages, Duchess.
A child's story, she had thought when she had told Kenton. But now...
White Sand, Volume 1, by Brandon Sanderson, has been a graphic audio production. Copyright 2016 by Brandon Sanderson. Recorded with the permission of the author and Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2019, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Narrated by Terrence Aselford. With performances by Alexander Strain as Kenton, Dawn Ursula as Chris, Jason B. McIntosh as Bayon, Frank Britton as Cinder, Yasmin Toison as Ace, Holly Vagley as Judge Helis, Peter Holdway as Praxton, Paul Reisman as Dirin, Kenyatta Rogers as Akron, Bradley Smith as Eric, and Eric Messner as Illorin. Also with Dwayne Washington, Jacob Yeh, Michael Glenn, Zeke Alton, Lawrence Redmond, Tim Carlin, Joe Mallon, Jonathan Church, Matthew Pauly, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Chris Gennebach, Joy Jones, Tony Nam, Scott McCormick, Thomas Keegan, Nick DePinto, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Mort Shelby, Steve Wanal, Chris Stinson, Alyssa Wilmoth, Nora Ashradi, Ren Casey, David Fernandez, David Zitney, Tia Shearer, Andy Brownstein, Michael John Casey, and Chris Davenport as Hoyb. The graphic novel direct-to-graphic audio adaptation by Rick Hoskin. Directed by Scott McCormick. Produced by Richard Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Justin Wirtz. Kenton and the Duchess Chrysala will return in White Sand Volume 2. Following the loss of most of his colleagues in a violent ambush, Kenton is now Lord Mastral of the few remaining Sandmasters. With the ruling council poised against him, the hot-headed Kenton must become a diplomat to have any hope of preventing the eradication of the Diem forever. However, there's another complication. Assassins are coming for him from all directions, and Kenton's only true ally is Chris, a visitor from the other side of the planet, who has an agenda of her own to pursue. Keep listening for a preview of another exciting title in Graphic Audio.
As I stood there with my sword in my hand, the blade dripping blood on the floor, I couldn't help but wonder if the blood belonged to my father.
A new fantasy series in graphic audio from New York Times best-selling author Peter David. Sir Apropos of Nothing. An unlikely hero who can't help himself, and despite himself, always winds up doing the right thing. Eventually.
I am by trade neither writer nor historian. I am merely a master of fabrication, which I am told is all one requires to take up either of the aforementioned pursuits. I am also told that readers require something of an immediate nature, preferably something involving action, to draw them into the narrative. If nothing else, apparently, it gives the reader an idea of where the story is going to go. I can sympathize with that requirement. I've lived my life without the faintest clue as to where it was going, walking an extremely angled and treacherous path in order to arrive at no place that I actually started out to get to.
In the grand tradition of the Once and Future King, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and the Forest Kingdom saga, Graphic Audio presents a rogue, a rascal, a scoundrel, a cheat, and those are his good points. Lame of leg, but fast of wit, the only reason Apropos doesn't consider chivalry dead is because he's not yet through with it.
I no longer care about right and wrong. All I know is what I wanted my entire life, to be a hero. I would hijack Destiny's plot, laugh in the face of the author, and write my own ending. I would turn it around. No longer would I be Apropos the disposable character. Instead, I would take over the narrative and drive it in a direction more to my liking. I would be more than Apropos of Nothing.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,000 titles and 100 series to choose from in high-quality download formats. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can now conveniently purchase a download series set from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can also earn loyalty rewards points redeemable towards future online purchases. You can stream or get full downloads directly to your mobile phone or tablet with our newly updated Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. For those of you who are new to Graphic Audio, check out our Graphic Audio Streams subscription service, where you can choose from four different genres. Each plan features two Graphic Audio titles per month to listen to through our Graphic Audio Access app. At the beginning of every month, the previous featured titles will be automatically removed and replaced by the new featured titles. It's an economical way to check out and sample titles from our various series in Graphic Audio, starting at only $4.99 per month. And be sure to listen to our newly reformatted Graphic Audio Story Podcast, GASP. Please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and recommend us to your friends and family. You can get GASP in the free Graphic Audio Access app or subscribe to GASP through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RSS feeds. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.